and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for Life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Friday morning as we kick off the second weekend up here at Saratoga with a nice card. Unfortunately, they're off the turf. All the races except for the feature race to Lake George. We'll keep our fingers crossed that the weather holds. And as I drove in this morning, it sounded like that was a possibility. The weekend looks very good, however. So looking forward to some nice racing over the next couple of days. Don't forget, Del Mar opens today. Don't forget it about noontime today. We will open the entries for the Sunday Show Pool Contest. Go to CapitalOTB.com and check that out as well. Trifecta Challenge down at the Clubhouse Racebook. Bounty Bet today. So, again, plenty of action, including right here on Racing Across America. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Matt Shearer. Works with 10 Strike Racing and Marshall Graham a lot. We'll have Marshall in at some point. I saw him in the paddock as well. But both of them, Marshall is part owner, and Matt as trainer. She's looking lucky in the coaching club American Oaks tomorrow. We'll talk about that. And Jenna Antonucci a little bit later on. Belmont Stakes winner with Arcangelo a few weeks ago. She actually won a race up here at Saratoga just a couple of days ago as well. So looking forward to that a little bit later on. But also looking forward to a discussion with our friend Brian Boye, Hall of Fame Communications Director for the National Museum of Racing. Brought Brian in early in the meet because we want to go through some of the events over at the museum and always want to tout people who maybe aren't familiar with the layout here or just have never come, but you have a trip planned up. Museum of Racing is right across the street, so definitely put it on your agenda. Brian, good morning.
Morning, Seth. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Very good. And why don't we start right out, give the days and the hours for the summertime at the museum.
So we're open every day during the meet. It's 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and as you said, we're right across the street from Saratoga Racecourse. It's 191 Union Avenue, and lots of programs, lots of great new exhibits, and a lot going on this summer.
Yeah, I was over shooting some video yesterday, which we'll throw up, and we'll talk about some of the exhibits and whatnot. But again, I will tout to people, particularly make a day of it. Come up, grab a little breakfast at the track, and then you have a little time, go over to the museum because you'll be able to spend quite a bit of time over at the museum and then back to the track for the afternoon. And one of the, I went yesterday and just got a few seconds of what is a relatively new addition to the track in the Hall of Fame room. The 360-degree movie, which I know has become very popular.
Yeah, we opened it in the fall of 2020. And actually this year, if you've seen it before, we've got some additions to it. We've made some tweaks. There's some new clips in there, a couple. Before, you're going to want to come back because it's a bit different. We're hoping to update this every couple of years just to keep it fresh. When we initially did the production work on this, we interviewed probably twice as many people that we could actually use in the 16-minute film. So we've got a lot of stuff kind of archived and ready to go just to keep it fresh and updated. And it's a great film. Bob Costas narrated it for us, and it's really been a game changer for the museum.
Yeah, people got a little flavor of it there. The screens come down in the middle. And there was a nice crowd in there yesterday. I was there later in the afternoon. Tom Durkin introduces it, Bob Costas narrates it, and a lot of notable names throughout the presentation as well. Also wanted to touch on, I took a shot over there, and I know you guys sent out a press release just recently, and as I was talking to some of the people at the museum, I hadn't realized it, but a remnant of Arlington Park out in front of the museum now, there is the Against All Odds statue with John Henry, which I think is a great addition to the grounds.
Yeah, it was a tremendous gift to the museum. Bill Carstangen and Churchill Downs donated this to us, and obviously everybody was very saddened to learn that Arlington Park was going to be closing. You know, but this was a nice tribute to the track for them to give this to us. And, you know, what better place? John Henry is a Hall of Famer. Bill Shoemaker, who wrote it. If you're not familiar with the statue, it's the closing strides of the inaugural Arlington Million from 1981, where John Henry beat the BART in the shadow of the wire. And it was the first million-dollar thoroughbred race in America. So a lot of historical significance. And it just fits in so amazingly with our property. And, you know, we thank Churchill Downs. It's a great gift to us.
Yeah, Shoemaker on John Henry and the BART. I think that we had a little video of that if folks want to check it out as well. I had some other video, and we'll touch on some of that as well. But first of all, I want to let you tout what's coming up at the museum this summer. I see you have the Saturday morning socials. Talk a little bit about that. Some other events coming up, including annually one of the social events of the season, the museum ball. So just line us up, what's coming up this summer.
Yeah, so the Saturday morning social program is something I really encourage everybody to come check out. And it's free admission. You can't beat this.
That's so perfect.
Every Saturday from 9 to 11, we offer free admission. We've had some wonderful industry sponsors that have stepped up and helped us offset the cost of allowing everybody in for free during those hours. But we've got a handicapping seminar every Saturday morning as part of this. We had Richard Eng last weekend. Tom Amello, our old friend from Capital OTB, and you know, here at Saratoga, is going to be doing the handicapping for the rest of the meet. So he'll come and break down the Saturday card at Saratoga. You know, we give out PPs from Equibase of the big races of the day, so the graded stakes. And Tom will answer any sort of questions you have, whether you're a newbie and just trying to figure out how to place a bet, or if you're, you know, want some of that real in-depth knowledge, you know, he'll provide that. But along with those, every weekend there's something different, whether it's an artist coming in to talk about some of their new work, you know, an author. This Saturday, we've got Maddie Zanetti from Impressions, who's coming in with her children's book, Upset, the original Dark Horse. And she actually brings the miniature horse Upset with her. So if you've got the kids, it's a great...
We had Maddie and Marianne in the other day talking about the horse.
It's so cool, and the kids love Upset, and such a fan attraction. But, you know, we've got so many other books and artists coming in. A lot of stuff tied in with Secretariat this summer, obviously, with the exhibit we have in the 50th anniversary of the Triple Crown. So that's kind of a big theme for us. So we have those every Saturday. We've got a racing partnership and syndicate night, which is a big thing on August 1st. So we've got 16 or 17 different partnerships ranging from, you know, the real big boys, you know, the West Point Thoroughbreds, the Starlights, the Team Valors, to, you know, just local or New York-based partnerships. And an opportunity to meet these people and see if, you know, you want to get involved in racing. It's an opportunity to meet these people.
That's a great idea.
Learn about their programs. Yeah. And this is something we started a few years ago, and we had maybe six or eight partnerships the first year, and it's just grown, and it's a big night at the museum. And a lot of people have gotten involved in the ownership from coming through this program. So, you know, that's something we're really excited about. And our two new exhibits, obviously, 50th anniversary of Secretariat,
let me lead into that because I went over and shot some video yesterday, and the Secretariat exhibit is really good. There were some folks watching the video of the Belmont Stakes, and I went around and got a little bit of video. The guys can show that as well. But what I found notable, the Derby Trophy, the Preakness Trophy, the Belmont Trophy, and then the Triple Crown Trophy as well. It's a great exhibit, a great tribute to Secretariat.
We've really got all the bases covered with this exhibit, and we worked with Secretariat.com and the Chenery family, and you know, a lot of different tracks donated stuff to us and put things on loan. And you know, the amazing artwork, the photography, the pop culture items. We've got video of all the Triple Crown races. We've got individual videos of the connections of Secretariat. So we've got a little video about Lucien Lauren. We've got one about Ron Turcotte, Penny Chenery, Christopher Chenery. You know, just to tell that story, and you know, it tells a bigger story too about the history of racing in Virginia. There's a ton of Hall of Famers that were bred in Virginia that go back all the way to the 19th century. So you get to learn about a grand story here, and it's been very popular. We started it with a traveling exhibition. We went to the three Triple Crown tracks. We were at Churchill for the Derby, Pimlico for the Preakness, and then Belmont for the Belmont Stakes. And we're going to have at least one more stop after the season with this traveling exhibit. We're going down to Colonial Downs in early September for their final weekend, Virginia, the home state of Secretariat. And then it's a possibility we might have a couple more places as well, too. So it's been a big hit.
Yeah, I was talking to the staff, and they said you were around with the exhibits, and it got a great response. And I swear, I was over at the museum taking video. The guys can tell me in my ear what the situation is there, because I also wanted to talk about the other exhibit. Last year, the photographer was last year's exhibit.
So Barbara Livingston last year shared with us her collection of the Jim Rafferty collection, who was turf photos for you know, covered the racing scene for decades. And we've
and this year it's similar to that for folks who were over there, in that there are a lot of nice historical photos. And again, if the guys have the video, the Burt Morgan photo exhibit, as I say, that you go through and you look, and there are notables from the past. It's fun to look at.
It's amazing. You know, the museum a couple years ago was fortunate enough to receive a gift of Burt Morgan's negatives, more than 4,000 negatives. And, you know, a lot of them we had to do restoration work on. Some of these had been sitting in a basement for a while. But, you know, we culled from all of those thousands a selection of about 60 of them for, we're doing a focus on Saratoga. So, and some of these go back to the 1940s, all the way up to the early 1980s. So you see such a range of imagery, and it's different stuff too. It's racing action, it's the scene, it's jocks, it's trainers, it's just the whole environment of what racing is like, and gives you a lot of flavor of Saratoga through the years.
Yeah,
so really exciting pretty, stuff.
Yeah, very good. Also, we didn't mention some of the ongoing stuff when we touched on the events, the Oklahoma Training Track Tour, but I think a lot of people interested in the Tom Durkin tours.
What better way to visit a museum than to have one of the greatest storytellers in racing history take you through it? And, you know, Tom has been a trustee of the museum for a few years, and he offered this up. He goes, well, what if I come through and give people tours? And it just was like a light bulb going off. And it's been such a popular program over the years. And, you know, he gives you a real tour of all the different exhibits and, you know, takes you through. He's got such incredible knowledge. But it's a unique flair with Tom, you know, his storytelling ability, his personal recollections of things, you know, and it's just a great thing to have him. He's such an ambassador for the museum and for the sport, and those tours, they sell out. So you gotta book them online and get them in there a week or two advance, because they do fill up quickly.
Yeah, we followed one around a couple of years ago and took some video, and it's definitely worth the visit to be taken around by Tom. One of the big events, obviously, every year with the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame is the Hall of Fame. Eight inductees this year, including Corey Nakatani, Arrogate, California Chrome Songbird. Then you get to the Historic Review Committee, Fernando Toro, for the Pillars of the Turf, John Haynes, Leonard Jerome, and Stella Thayer. That will be August 4th, 10:30 a.m. live, but you can also watch via the museum's website. Just talk a little bit about this year's class.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks away from today from induction day. It's an absolutely exceptional class.
Yeah.
You look at the three modern racehorses that are in, and they were all elected on their first year of eligibility, which isn't something that's typical unless you're an absolute lock. So Arrogate, as we know here at Saratoga, set the track record in the Travers, you know, the only horse in history to do a sub-2-minute on a mile and a quarter on the dirt here. So went on to win the Breeders' Cup and the Pegasus and that amazing race in Dubai. You know, a two-time champion in Songbird, a two-time Horse of the Year in California Chrome. So absolutely exceptional group of horses. The jockeys, Corey Nakatani, over 3,900 career wins, 10 Breeders' Cup wins, more than 10 riding titles in Southern California. So we're thrilled to have him in. You know, and Fernando Toro, I mean, what a great historic review selection. He came over from Chile in the mid-1950s and won over 3,500 races, won more than 80 graded stakes between 1976 and 1990. And you look at the races in California, the big races, and he clicked off just about all of them. And this was a time when, you know, in the 70s, he's riding against Hawley and Pinkai and all those guys. And then in the 80s, it's, you know, McCarron and Delahousse and DeSormo. And he was right there. And this was a guy that a lot of the Hall of Famers have been advocating for a number of years. So it's great to see him get his recognition in. And then the Pillars of the Turf. I mean, Leonard Jerome's one of the real interesting characters in racing history. This is a guy who established three racetracks in the New York
the,
area
the
in the 19th
century. The race is named after him,
the Jerome Stakes, which is one of America's oldest stakes race. But he founded Jerome Park, which was the original home of the Belmont Stakes. And then he was very involved in Sheepshead Bay and Morris Park and getting those tracks going. And people who aren't in racing probably have heard the name at some point because he's the grandfather of Winston Churchill. So he's got kind of an interesting connection there. And then John Haynes was absolutely essential in New York racing in the 1950s when there was a lot of transition going on, along with Christopher Chenery and Harry Guggenheim. He really brought the New York scene together. They put a lot of money into, you know, Belmont, Aqueduct, and Saratoga. And he was one of the original people of getting NYRA established. And then Stella Thayer, who's just been an incredible, incredible person for this sport. You know, she's operated Tampa Bay Down since 1986. She was the first woman president of the National Museum of Racing. She's been a steward in the Jockey Club. And just, you know, she's done amazing things in Florida and as a leader throughout the sport. And, you know, she's been one of our great trustees at the museum for a long time. And we're thrilled that she's going to be here for this honor. So
it really is a great class. And, again, 2 weeks from today, August 4th, Basic Tipton Pavilion. Get there early, though, to get a seat. 10:30, and it's worth the visit. It's fun. Tom going to host again?
Tom Durkin will be the MC. You know, we're going to do a special presentation for Ed Bowen this year, who's been our Hall of Fame chairman for a number of years. You know, he's just been a great asset to the museum and our history and everything. So we're doing a little presentation for Ed that he'll be here to accept. And we got a couple other fun things for the ceremony. I won't let the cat out of the bag on some of it, but we're really excited about this year's crop. You know, 9:30, the doors will open. 10:30, we start. And if you're not able to make it here, we encourage you to come. But if you can't make it, right on our website, racingmuseum.org, you can watch the ceremony right there.
Yeah, so. I've been there, unfortunately, at this point. I'm usually sitting here doing television when it kicks off. I try to make it over, but it's shut out a lot. But if you can't make it, certainly worth checking on the website. But if you can make it, yeah, make a day of it. Come up and check out the ceremony and then come over to the racetrack. And while you were talking, we were showing some video I shot yesterday of the actual Hall of Fame, which is very different now than it was years ago with the plaques on the wall. But it signifies what the museum has been doing over the past few years, kind of embracing the technology. But we saw, I was punching the Jerry Bailey picture and then the Forego picture, and the plaque comes up and you can watch races and whatnot. It is a 21st century
we really wanted to do something different. And you know, the whole idea when we started this out was that we were kind of running out of space.
We were
trying to figure out what to do, and we thought about maybe doing a second level with a mezzanine. But, you know, John Hendrickson, who's our chairman, he said, you know, let's really make something unique here. You know, you go to Cooperstown or Canton or these other great halls of fame, you see the plaques, you see the bus. They're great. You know, they're absolutely great. But we wanted to set ourselves apart a little bit. So these interactive Hall of Fame plaques, like you mentioned, you know, we can show you video of some of these great races. We can show you image galleries. You know, before, if you came in and you looked at these plaques of these 19th century horses or jockeys, you've probably never seen a picture of a lot of these people. And we went through our archives. We worked with NYRA, Keeneland, all the different tracks and archives to, you know, put a comprehensive picture together. And the great thing about it is, you know, before, let's say for Mike Smith, for an example, you know, he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2003. His plaque doesn't mention anything about winning the Triple Crown or Zenyatta or any of those great horses that came after that. But now we have the ability to update these in real time. You know, this year we had Javier Castellano wins the Kentucky Derby and the Belmont. The morning after those races, we're able to update that. So you've got real-time information. You know, so we're constantly updating these. Steve Asmussen breaks the wins record. Boom, that's up the next day. So we're always constantly updating the image galleries, the videos. And then just as you mentioned, the film is extraordinary. It's a 360-degree experience and really takes you to the heart of racing.
And I had one more video where I just showed some of the general items around the museum, because you know, we've talked about some of the highlights, but there's plenty more at the museum. There are trophies and there are silks and there's a lot of ephemera from the various tracks, you know, press passes and tickets and whatnot. This jockey scale was great from Europe, certainly. So it's more than some of the highlights we've talked about. It's a place where you can walk around and spend a couple hours and have a great afternoon.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I stress to people, even if you're not an expert on racing, you can come in the artwork collection. I would argue that we have the finest collection of equine artwork in the world. I mean, it's dating back to stuff from Edward Troy in the pre-Civil War era all the way up to their modern era. I mean, some of the artwork is just fantastic. So even if you don't have a deep connection to racing, you will love it from a museum and an artwork perspective. So we've really got something for everybody. Children's programs, you know, a lot of outreach stuff. You mentioned the Oklahoma tours we do. We also do farm tours. You know, we're going to old friends at Cabin Creek. Some of the other ones have been so popular that they've sold out. But, you know, we're trying to do a lot of different outreach stuff as well, too, to, you know, we realize not everybody can get to Saratoga, but, you know, maybe you can get to a farm, or, you know, it was big for us to get to those tracks during the Triple Crown season. So that's our focus, is to take this museum as much out as we can to the people.
Yeah, as I say, it has moved into the 21st century. A lot of that thanks to John Hendrickson, certainly. He's been pushing that. And I will again tell, for folks who aren't familiar with the area, it is literally right across the street, as it should be, across from the America's Special Track, the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. It's worth a visit if you're coming up here this year. Once again, you're open 7 days, and hours are?
7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. during the race meet. After Saratoga, we are open year-round, so yeah, if you can't make it during the meet, the hours do change a little bit after the racing season. But right now, 9 to 5 every day.
And you can also go to the website and pull up these events and whatnot as well if you want to check them out going forward. Brian, really appreciate the visit. As I say, I wanted to get you in early here to kind of tout what's coming up.
Thanks.
Talk a little
bit
about the Hall of Fame inductions in a couple of weeks and more. And as they say, appreciate the visit, and good luck on the season.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Matt Shearer, again, a runner in tomorrow's Coaching Club American Oaks, so we'll catch up on that and much more. A little bit later on, Jenna Antonucci, winner of this year's Belmont Stakes with Arcangelo. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Turn your love of racing into savings with equine discounts through the NTRA. Purchase through equine discounts and receive great savings on well-known brands like John Deere, Sherwin-Williams, Big Ass Fans, Farmers Insurance, and Office Depot. Join thousands of other equine members and support companies that give back to the sport we all love. Call 866-678-4289 or visit equinediscounts.com to start saving today.
Sometimes it pays to go with the flow, to check your worries at the door, to reconnect with your crew, to follow the thrills and the flavor, to roll with it and see where it takes you, to enjoy every minute to its fullest, and to dance like there's no tomorrow. You can do that here at Rivers Casino and Resort Schenectady, where the good times flow.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, happy to be joined now by trainer Matt Shearer. You've seen his name, I'm sure, in the program. Mostly Kentucky races, but up here at Saratoga, 10th Strike Racing and Marshall Graham and others. So I thought we'd pull Matt in today, particularly because tomorrow, going to enter it in the Coaching Club American Oaks. Matt, good morning.
Morning.
And talk a little bit about that. Your base of operations is Kentucky, correct?
Yeah, it's at Churchill Downs. Got about 16 or so there right now. Brought up five to Saratoga just for the meet. We did that last year. We brought just a handful of horses up here. So, you know, we just like to get a little bit more exposure and, you know, a little bit better racing up here right now. So we like to bring the, you know, what we think are the better ones up here.
So you personally, you're back and forth?
I haven't gone back yet, but I mean, at some point I'll probably head back, you know, once or twice. Yeah.
And before we get into it, we will certainly touch on She's Looking Lucky tomorrow. But I just, when we bring people back here, particularly somebody I've never had on before, I like to let the audience know a little bit. And again, I'm sure folks who are Capital OTB players have seen your name in the program. Everybody enjoys the Kentucky racing, but I always, always like to get a little background. How'd you get into the game?
I had probably a little bit different route than most people do. Nobody in my family was involved in racing or anything like that.
Same with me.
Yeah, well, okay, well, good. mine was basically just watching races, watching the Derby and stuff growing up. And so I got, you know, a little bit interested when I was in college. I was actually an animal science major in school, so wasn't sure what I was going to do with that necessarily. And, you know, I ended up taking just a hot walking job at a local racetrack, which is Thistledown Racetrack. Yeah, Thistledown. So I went and worked there for a short time, and eventually I ended up I went to work for McPeak, so I came up under him.
So were you a racing fan before you got the hot walk job?
I was literally just watching Kentucky Derby. So okay. I wasn't right. even gambling. I didn't know anything about betting. I was as green as they come, even in, you know, when I was in college. So I got a really late start compared to, you know, most people that grow up on the track, or they go up, you know, they sneak into the races betting and stuff like that. So I don't have any cool story like that. I was just literally just like, well, I'm an animal science major. I don't know what else to do, you know. So
and define animal sciences for us. I've heard the term before.
Basically, I was a zoology major is what they call it. It was a very tough major. It was not easy. A lot of, like, anatomy classes and physiology classes and marine. It was very tough. It was a lot different.
Do you feel
than
it's
what,
played into it, – it works for
– I mean, a little bit. Honestly, not so much what you learn, like, as far as, like, anatomy of a horse or something. That honestly wasn't really what I got out of it most. What I got out of it most was how difficult it was to graduate. So, like, you kind of learn your work ethic and you learn how to, you know, be organized and just get stuff done. And that's basically the biggest thing that I took away from it.
And every year when I have trainers on here, I like to talk a little bit about that because I think people who are fans, and we get a lot of new fans as well, aren't familiar necessarily. What is the work ethic? Give us a day in Saratoga for you. Like yesterday, you had a horse in. Take us through the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you get to the barn early, you know, 4:45, something like that. For me, you go through checking legs, you know, look at all the horses, make sure everybody's eating, you know, just check on, you know, overall health of the horse and everything. Then you go through your training, you know, regimen, whether it's horses going to the track to gallop or jog, or some of them walk, depending on what they're doing that day. You know, and then you go to set feed. Usually we feed 9:30, 10 a.m., something like that. We can feed a little bit earlier up here because I only have the five up here. And then, you know, you kind of wait for races. You know, for me, I was claiming out of one or two yesterday, so I'm running back and forth. You know, I'm at the barn, then I'm running up to the racing office trying to fill out a slip, claim, talk to my owners, drop the slip, lose the shake, go back to the barn, get the horse ready for the race, bring him over, run the race, go back. So it's all day. And I've had experience, you know, I've done it now as a trainer, and I did it as an assistant. I was up here, I worked for McPeak up here as an assistant, and honestly, that can be just as difficult, just as time consuming being an assistant here for, you know, a bigger trainer like Kenny. It's all day. It never stops. And that was back when I think just Tuesdays was the dark day, I think. Yeah. So that was like literally the only day you had to just finally relax for, you know, just a little bit, but it's a grind up here for sure.
Because up here it's not only the racing, but there's the social aspect. You're going out with the owners.
Yeah, for sure.
In the morning as well.
Definitely.
You get a lot of that. You mentioned Ken McPeak, and I wanted to touch on a little bit of that. You mentioned, I always ask somebody like you, hey, first experience up here, what? But having read, you were up here with Kenny McPeak but you were also part of the team Golden Ticket with the Dead Heat and the Travers.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? When Golden Ticket Dead Heated, I don't think I was up here that meet, right? I think I was up here the very next year. But, yeah, Golden Ticket, he was man, he was a cool horse.
Yeah.
Tiny little horse, but, I mean, he was tough as they come.
Yeah, Dead Heated with Alpha that year. What was it, 2012? Talk a little bit about your time with Kenny McPeak, though, because I'm guessing you probably wind up with a good education, but he seems like a guy who is a taskmaster as well and plays the game. He'll buy horses and whatnot, so I'm sure you'll walk away learning a lot.
I took almost everything from Kenny. I mean, I followed kind of the way he does things. He's extremely organized with set lists and, you know, he's got horses all over the country at different locations, so he has assistants, and, you know, he's constantly talking to his assistants and constant communication with owners. And, so I kind of stole a lot of things from his operation all the way down to, he has name cards and everything on the horses' stalls. I even do that. I copied that off of him. So, it was great working for him.
And how long have you been on your own?
I've been on my own, I think it's been about 7 years, but the first, like, three years was just, I mean, I had, like, four horses. Like, I was doing a lot of the work myself.
So. Yeah.
It wasn't until actually Marshall Graham from Ten Strike ended up contacting me, and my numbers started to go up a little bit, and then, you know, you kind of grow a little bit, yeah. First couple years it was very lean, I literally had no horses when I took out my trainer's license. I was just looking to claim. I was very naive, didn't know how necessarily business worked. And I mean, I started out with one horse, so, and I just built my way up.
I always like to get people to talk about that too, and you may be a good guy to flesh that out and talk about what a difference this is, because you come into the game, and I think a lot of people think, hey, trainer, they're back there teaching the horse. But you got to be. You're also a businessman. I mean, to run a stable, it's a business because you have to buy all the equipment and you have to pay the help and whatnot. So it's much more than just the training of the horses aspect.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you got to be obviously good with the horses and, you know, take good care of your horses and be a good horseman and know, you know, what you're doing with training. But you also, on the other hand, you have to be able to manage people. Dealing with, you know, your employees and stuff like that can just be almost as difficult sometimes with the horse issues and stuff. So just keeping morale and keeping everybody happy and stuff like that. And then, you know, you have to keep your books straight and, you know, payroll and money coming in and coming out. So, it's not an easy, business.
I say that to people. You don't realize what these guys, accounting and people skills and everything. You remember your first winner?
My first winner? Turfway Park. Claimed a horse named Grateful Life for 15 at Churchill, and we won any other than at Turfway like a month or so later.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. And you've been talking here about the claiming game, and I was listening to an interview with you yesterday, and you talked in that about you're really kind of at the races every day, horses going or not, because you're looking, and you kind of alluded to it when you mentioned it earlier. Talk about playing the claiming game and being on the lookout for horses and dealing with your owners there too.
Yeah, you kind of have to be a student of the game. You got to watch a lot of races. You kind of get a feel for certain circuits. You kind of get to know certain horses and trainers, and, you know, when you can look at trainer patterns and, you know, when certain trainers may be dropping horses that you think maybe not so suspicious as, as other people might think, oh, no, that's scary. But if you kind of know the circuit and, you know, you've watched and you do your homework, you can kind of pick up on things and, you know, you get lucky every now and then and claim a good one here and there. So you just have to watch a lot. And, you know, like with myself and, you know, like with Marshall, he's obviously one of my biggest claiming owners. We luckily we see eye to eye on a lot of horses and the way, you know, we want to see on paper, you know, going into claiming a horse. So it's good having a guy like that, you know, because we can bounce ideas off each other and, you know, kind of go from there.
Yeah, Marshall's great, smart guy, and he's become a prominent owner now and student of the game on the betting side as well. And speaking of claiming and you, you know, kind of looking down at Equibase pulled up, and you've had horses, you know, going not too far back, Churchill, Indiana, Keeneland Fairgrounds, but you were also at Oaklawn this winter. And I have to ask, because I typically will talk to Nancy Holthus. We're down in the studio most of the year with our show, so I'll talk to Nancy on big race days down there on the phone, and we've been talking the last couple of years. The claim box down there is crazy. Yeah. So I'm assuming you go with your fingers. I have had her tell me a couple of times they're shaking like 40.
They can shake. Yeah, I mean, they definitely shake 20, 25 ways for sure. Honestly, I'm kind of used to it. At Churchill, they do as much, you know, they do as much claiming there too. And, you know, Saratoga, they do a lot. It's, you know, a lot of claims or a lot of people claiming up here too. So it's I'm kind of used to it. But, yeah, it's been over the last probably 2-3 years, it's gone way, way up. I mean, I think the horse population has kind of shrunk, and a number of owners right now wanting horses has gone up. So you just – there's this, you know – this funny dynamic where we're all going for the same horses, and you know that's obviously that's why the shakes, you know, you see so many 20 way shakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Rick Hamley was there a couple of years ago, and he called me one day. I was like, man, it was like four. It was incredible, and he had a picture of the racing office with people.
You'll get a bunch of people in the office. You almost can't fit sometimes.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about dealing with Marshall. As I mentioned, he 10-strike racing. He's a contest player, so he plays the game. If you look at his Twitter feed, he analyzes a lot. He's a lot of fun. I saw him in the paddock yesterday. He spends the season up here now. We'll have him on the show at some point to talk his aspects of the game. But he's got to be a fun owner to work with.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, we've always got along really well. Like I said, we kind of see eye to eye on a lot of the horses we go for, which is nice. But we just kind of have the same kind of preference in what kind of horses we want to claim and everything like that. And then, you know, as far as, you know, managing or picking out races, again, it's very easy. We were just talking about it the other day. We've honestly never really had any big, you know, blow up about where to run a horse. It's just, I think we had success very early on since I had started claiming, and we just have that level of trust where he, you know, if I tell him we need to do this, and he'll say, okay, that's, you know, I can see that.
Perfect owner.
Yeah, exactly. He is.
All right, let's get into it, because Marshall Graham and 10 Strike is a part owner of She's Looking Lucky, who is entered in tomorrow's Coaching Club American Oaks. Comes in, and we're going to take a look at the stretch run here to her last race, optional claimer down at Ellis Park. She's going to win off by 7. Talk a little bit about this win down at Ellis, and then what prompted to come up and take the shot tomorrow in the Coaching Club.
Yeah, that day at Ellis, actually the weather had gotten really, really bad that day, and it absolutely poured rain. I was a little bit worried about just the surface of the track going into the race when I got there. She had never run on a sloppy track for me necessarily, but she was with Al Stahl earlier in her career, and she just kind of had a dull effort one time on an off track. I wasn't sure what had happened there, so I was a little bit worried going in the race if she didn't like the slop or not. But I mean, as soon as she broke out of the gate, she was pretty sharp, and you know, she took pressure on her outside. And you know, I thought the pace that she put up, it was like a 47, something like that. So I thought that was impressive, even though Ellis is definitely speed favoring, but 2 turns, mile and eighth in the slop, pressure on your outside, she goes 47 and draws off, I thought was about as impressive as you can necessarily be at Ellis. So she came out of the race really well. I was in the test barn with her after the race. I didn't think it had taken much out of her. She seemed full of herself. So you know, we let about a week go by, and we talked to everybody. I talked to, you know, Richard Dunn and Gary Barber and Marshall Graham and Todd Monk and everybody that's involved with her, and we all just kind of said, yeah, we might take a shot. So it was just going to depend on how she trained, and she came up here, and she had shipped up good, and she breezed once over at the Oklahoma, and again, like, it, you know, it didn't take anything out of her. She was good to go, so we said, we'll take a shot. Luckily, we got – I mean, I love her post position.
Outside in the 6-horse field.
Outside, yeah. She's outside of Hoosier Philly, who's, you know, another kind of speed horse. So it was nice to, you know, draw outside of that, obviously. I don't think this filly, I don't you know, my feeling, I don't think she loves being down on the inside. She was, she got the, she was in the one hole in the fantasy, didn't break as sharp, and she just kind of got closed off and never really did much running. But I thought that was a little bit of an excuse for her in that race. So, but no, yeah, she's doing great, and we, you know, got a good post. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. Certainly wish you a lot of luck in the coaching club tomorrow with She's Looking Lucky, and happy to have you here today. As I say, I always like to bring folks on that maybe the viewers aren't quite familiar with and give a little up-close and personal look. So wish you a lot of luck at the remainder of the meet and going forward as well, and we'll talk again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Matt Shearer, we'll take a break. When we come back, Jenna Antonucci, winner of the Belmont Stakes this year with Arcangelo. We'll talk about that and much more. Stay tuned.
Just watch the races when you can be in the middle of the action. For nearly 20 years, Bonaventure Stables' share-based ownership program has made thoroughbred ownership affordable for the everyday fan. Ownerships of 5 and 10% are now available on a nice selection of horses. As a partial owner with Bonaventure Stables, you'll enjoy all the benefits afforded every owner. Visit with your horse in the private stable area. Greet the trainers and jockeys in the paddock. And when your horse wins, savor the moment in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, or wherever you bring home the prize. Based in historic Saratoga Springs, Bonaventure Stables has been training winners and creating memories since 2005. Learn more, see available horses, and meet our team at bonaventurestables.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Jenna Antonucci, the winner, the historic winner of the Belmont Stakes just a few weeks ago with Arcangelo. And it went, once that horse crossed the finish line, I said, we're going to have Jenna in this season. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Happy to have you on board to talk about it. Let's just jump right into it and watch the stretch run of Arcangelo. Comes in with only four starts, but had won the Peter Pan. We're going to pull up the stretch run. Arcangelo is going to be the number three horse. Forte makes a nice late run, but it's too little too late as Arcangelo gets it done under Javier Castellano, who won the Derby and then caps the Triple Crown, winning the Belmont Stakes. And you can see the nice run here. Give us your thoughts on the entire situation, coming in with only the four starts off the Peter Pan and then a nice victory here.
The lack of starts really wasn't a concern. He had grown so much with every start, and I think him having some adversity earlier on in those maiden races definitely helped him grow and learn and whatnot. So we may have bypassed an allowance type of race or something with him getting that experience through there. And, you know, through the stretch run, it was just crazy. Like I've said previously, when that rail opened up and he was able to get a jump, it was – Those things don't happen in those kind of races. So grateful that it did.
Well, and you mentioned how crazy it was. I had to pull up the America's Best Racing video and watch it here because I look at that and I think everybody looks at that and think, I want some place in life where I'm that ecstatic. And it was just crazy watching you watch the monitor, look back at the track, watch the monitor, and then just, as I say, the joy from there. Talk about the feeling coming down the stretch and, and having this
experience. I always appreciate the split screen version. I look a little less crazy going on. So Belmont, as we know, is a vast racetrack because it's the only track where it's so big here in the States. And so you can lose yourself a little bit on if you're just watching on the monitor of where you actually are coming out of that turn. We had a plan. We had hoped to get a jump on him. We have such a high cruising speed and a sustained cruising speed. So watching that happen and really just trying to place him exactly where he is. And at this point, when you kind of see no one coming and he's maintaining, that's where it's, however, whatever that distance is, was the, oh my God, with a lot of filtering going on the extra language through that point. Yeah. So, pretty crazy.
As I say, that it's just fun. It brings a smile on everybody's face to watch.
Thank
it.
Thank you.
It had to be great to live through as well. And it seems like listening to the post-race interviews and whatnot, this maybe wasn't as important, certainly at the moment, but I wonder if it set in, the historic being the first women to win the Belmont Stakes. That in the moment, did that mean something? And if not, has it now kind of set in and meant a little more?
It's been a bit of a balanced conversation because it doesn't define and hasn't defined how I've lived my life.
Sure.
And how I attack, you know, everything that I go after. But I am so grateful that other people give that to me and that it has meant so much to their life. And that is a gift from them. And so I'm very grateful for that. And if it helps a little girl or someone that's older kind of persevere and dig through and it gives them a little hope, again, that's a huge gift.
Nice.
And I'm grateful for that.
Nice. Well, let's talk about now going forward, coming out of the Belmont Stakes. And I've been saying, and I've had people in here just the first few days, because the Travers is such a big event up here. We've talked 3-year-olds a little bit. The 3-year-old picture is just so undefined, really, at this point. And so pulled up a workout video from Arcangelo going back to Monday, right up here at Saratoga.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about, when did he get here? How's he doing up here?
We came up just about a week after the Belmont, and that was always the plan. He summered here last year in part of his growth and maturing, and so this was, you know, a spot that he's super comfortable with and likes to be, and he really flourishes up here. And so coming into this work, Javier really wanted to get back on board for this breeze. And we had Robert on him first breeze after the race, just that's his steady, you know, steady Eddie partner. And so we wanted to make sure we liked where everything was. And then I think this gave Javier a great, you know, feel that he's just as good, if not better, than what he had going into the Belmont. And just, it was cute. He pulled up afterwards and, like we've told him before, I just want you to go breeze the horse and breeze what you feel. He knows not to push the go button too much because we have a pretty high cruising speed. And so he pulled up on the backside and said to Fiona, I have no idea how fast I went, and I don't know if that's good or bad. So it was fun. It was perfect. Horse is thriving and doing well, and Javier was super pleased with the work.
So he's appreciated being back up here, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so the game plan is train up to the Travers?
It is. Yep, it is. He's, you know, doing great. This horse has had his entire career with spacing in between, just giving him that breathing room to grow and mature. We've gotten some flack, and that's fine. So as long as they're chattering about what we're doing, that's
racing.
A good thing. And, you know, there's plenty of Monday morning and lots of keyboard warriors and trainers, and that's fantastic. He's thriving. He's doing great. The closest we've run him back to back was the Peter Pan to the Belmont. And so we're going to continue to give him the room to grow and mature. And again, we have a nice focus, hopefully, for his 4-year-old career, God willing.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're going to stay focused on that, let him mature and keep getting stronger. And he's a mid-May foal. And so we're going to try and stay focused and doing right by him.
So the game plan will be what, once a week?
His works have always been a little more spaced out, just recognizing him with his cruising speed. I just don't find it necessary to come every 7 on a horse like this.
And you've kind of alluded to it already, and I talk quite a bit in here to trainers, not just of runners, but as they go to sales, the mental aspect. You have to have the horse with talent, but the mental aspect is important.
Huge.
Too. From the way you're talking, he has the right mental aspect.
He does, and that's what we needed to see grow, and that's literally why he came here last year as a 2-year-old, was just to go and grow and see. And, you know, John Ebert, his owner, took the leap in faith in us, and I said, this is my plan for him. You don't want to run until he's late 2-year-old, coming 3-year-old. This is the best thing I can do for him, to let him go grow up and see the world and all that this is, because there's no other facility and atmosphere where you can just feed it to them like this. And so we did that from the very beginning with him to help. He's very smart, and so it's anything that we can do to stimulate his mind, because the physical stuff is there.
Talk a little bit about that, how Saratoga is different than other spots.
Just the energy here is amazing, but it's also, there's just something special about Saratoga. So you get just such fan engagement, which is just fantastic. And so I think for the fans and the people that have supported this horse and our journey, to be able, for him to have that access and them to have that access to him is important, not just for the horse, but for what we're doing. You know, we need people out here loving on these horses and loving what we're doing. And then for him to be able to walk across the road and come through that paddock and deal with all the energy of the people and the noises and the smells is super important in developing a young horse and making sure that they don't fold when they're put in that position. And with our trajectory of hoping he'd be who he is, you know, desensitizing to that early, it's just his norm. And now he looks for the cameras and asks which side they'd like a picture of.
Do you plan to, always curious about the this plays into the mental aspect as well. Sometime in that week up to the drivers, plan to school him over in the paddock?
We'll see. You know, we don't have a hard plan. He goes through the paddock pretty much every day of his life, coming to the main track. So it's pretty much his norm. Not much rattles him at this point. He gets excited before the race a little bit, but he just thinks it's cool at this point. He thinks everyone's here for him. So
that's a very good attitude. Also, like to when I bring somebody in here for the first time, talk a little bit about the background. How did you get into the game, and talk a little bit about the progression?
Grew up riding show horses when I was a kid. Thoroughbreds were, you know, the warm bloods of the current day show horse world. You know, we didn't have a lot of European horses coming in to ride. And so I grew up on a lot of thoroughbreds or mixed thoroughbred breeds type of thing. And so for me, my grandparents got into racing when I was about 10. And so had, a full exposure to racing after I had already had, you know, almost 7+ years under my belt of riding. And it just progressed and came into the racing side kind of by happenstance of just wanting to understand how they were developed and started as young horses, and so that I could retrain them better. And got bit by it, and you know, love they're just so smart, and their athleticism is just unparalleled. And so got drawn in through the, you know, being inquisitive, and here we are.
And I read also in the bio you spent some time with Wayne Lucas
under his program at Padua at the time. His program was in place for developing young horses, and it was a great exposure. He's, you know, been, I think, a staple and a paramount in a lot of how the larger operations and how it should be done. You know, the attention to detail, not compromising, keeping it, you know, keep it right. You know, no matter where you go, it's done at X level. You know, make sure it's right when you come out of the barn. Make sure the horses are right. And that attention to detail is just paramount.
Talk a little bit also, I'm curious, has technology changed things? Because, again, I got in touch with you and you were just coming into town. So, well, you haven't been in town, but I'm sure the technology plays into being able to have horses at various venues that are far
Absolutely.
Away. Talk about the technology.
I think technology, you know, it's a balance, right? We need to be able to shut it off. Otherwise, you don't ever get a break. And so I think it's, you know, where we're very, as we're very horse forward, we're very communication forward. You know, we want our owners to be able to see what we're seeing and hear it and watch horses breeze. And, you know, if I'm not at a stable where we have some horses that if our crew is uncomfortable with something, or, you know, hey, can you grab a video of that horse and pictures and whatnot. So it's just absolutely a necessity at this point. I know the game has evolved a lot. I give the likes of Wayne and Kieran and you know, more of the old school guys props that they were able to split stables before we had you know, this at our palms. So I think it gives the team a little more confidence when you're not standing next to them too, that if they're not sure about something, hey, this is what I'm seeing. And so I think it's changing how people think about it. It makes people a little less, well, you're not staring at my horse, we're good. And so it's an important tool that we can put a layer of it in and get it to our owners so that they can enjoy it.
Well, obviously, you're up here with Archangelo and the Travers coming along, but I also wanted to pull up just a couple of days ago, going back to Wednesday, the stable.
Yep.
You got to love day number 5, a win in the books up here at Saratoga. We're going to watch the stretch run number 7 rock the weekend is going to get it done under the aforementioned Javier Castellanos. So, again, this has to feel good to get a win on day five of the meet.
Always.
And as you were out of town, get a little...
We were rooting and watching. I was actually, my fiance had an event with his career. He's a fireman, so he was getting an award. So that was extremely important. And so we were actually watching this live from Florida in the middle of that ceremony, truth be told. So here I'm just like, come on, buddy, get by him. And so he was a grinder, and it was great. I'm so thrilled for Mr. Kiesel, his owner. The horse, we did get claimed. But he was appropriately placed, homebred. So for him to be able to journey with this horse, we actually broke and trained him and brought him along, sent him to Gulfstream at first, thinking he was just going to be a turf poly kind of guy, and he's been able to find a level on the dirt. So, you know, good luck to the new connections with him, and we were thrilled that the owner was able to get a win, not only at Saratoga, but with a homebred. New York bred is pretty special.
And he'd been in claimers the entire career, so wasn't necessarily a surprise that he lost him, but you get the W up at Saratoga. So everybody says a win at Saratoga, no matter what level.
I told Mr. Kiesel to win at Saratoga and win with the homebred is probably a single-digit percentage of people that accomplish such a feat. So I'm super happy for them and you know, cool horse.
Yeah, and as they say, to put a win in the books,
that
early in the meet is a lot of fun as well. But again, I know after the Belmont, you were touting the help, and you weren't in town the other day, so tout the help a little bit. That's very important when you have various
cornerstone. Venues. You know, I'm so blessed with our team, and we have, thankfully, very little turnover, and it's more of a family environment for us. Fiona and Robert, married, obviously, and Fiona being my assistant, and Robert, you know, one of our instrumental riders in our team, and so you can't do it without the team, and, you know, I wish everyone's name could be in the program because they are deserved to be there, and so grateful that we have a team that we do.
And again, looking at Equibase, most of your recent runners were down at Gulfstream. Mm-hmm. That's the home base down in Florida. And when you sat down, we were talking a little bit about you have the farm over in Ocala. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, we've basically we are conception to retirement, and so basically everything. You know, what we have found is with my skill sets and Katie, my business partner's skill sets, and the needs of owners, it's like, how can we help get all these services in one spot? And so over the last couple of years now, that's what we've done. And so from breeding all the way through to retirement, that our owners know that we have the resources and the reach out, and we do a lot of layups and rehabs for other trainers. And so that's fun to do work with them and be able to send them back and watch them succeed for their connections as well. And so just trying to create a different vibe and just, you know, really trying to let people know they have a spot and we're here for them and give them the best that we can. And a lot of horses that we break and develop and bring along, they don't come to me. So it's really fun to be able to send them on to these different trainers and say, hey, this is where we think these horses are and who they might be, and, you know, be able to root them on is pretty awesome.
The farm has a website too, right?
It is. It's Horsology Inc. Horsologyinc.com.
Horsology Inc. So people can check that out.
Thank you.
Jen, again, congratulations certainly on the win in the Belmont Stakes, the historic win in the Belmont Stakes. Good luck going forward. And, how many horses do you have up here?
We have 10 up here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And because you drove, about a 24-hour drive, right?
It was 20-ish.
Okay.
I got lucky.
My dad was retired down the Bradenton area, and I remember
hours.
I would drive down for about a week and stay down there.
It takes you about a week to get there.
No. The kicker is, you're driving along and you cross the Florida border and you think,
and you're still driving.
Oh,
you have not arrived.
And you realize, you've got a haul there.
Sure.
But again, appreciate the visit, and we'll be looking forward to the other starters as well.
Thank you.
Certainly Arcangelo coming up a little bit later. Good luck. We'll talk again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. But again, tomorrow on the Saturday edition, we'll kick off 9 a.m. handicapper, some more 10 a.m. with Racing Across America for Saturday morning. The weather, again, it's holding up nicely here. Knock on wood, we hold out today, and tomorrow and Sunday are supposed to be beautiful. So if you're planning to come up, your plans are set, and it's going to be a good weekend of racing, including today's card as well. So keep that in mind. Otherwise, we'll wrap it up again tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., 10 a.m., Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by... Racing Across America is brought to you by... Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.